This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here today with Dr. Stella Offner from the Harvard Smithsonian Centre for Astrophysics. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Thank you.
So your work is on star formation.
That's right.
Can we start off with the general consensus of what we think is the way that stars are formed?
All right, so I mostly work on the formation of low-mass stars, that is, stars like our sun. The way they typically form is from very large, massive clouds of gas. These clouds are very, very low density, that is far below the density of any vacuum that we can achieve in the lab here on Earth. So maybe on average only a few hundred or a few thousand particles per centimeter cubed. So in these giant clouds, observers call it like they see it, giant molecular clouds. They're large. They're made of molecular gas. These clouds are a few to maybe 10 parsecs across and contain anywhere from 100 to maybe a million solar masses for the largest ones. So these clouds of gas go ahead and become gravitationally unstable, so gravity plays a big role, and then they form individual stars out of this collapse process that occurs and is ongoing through these clouds.
So what molecules are we talking about here? Is it just kind of hydrogen?
Yes, molecular hydrogen is the dominant one.
Okay, so you have this collapse of a cloud of gas. Is it really is? I mean, how do we know that that happens? Do you do simulations or is this just from observations?
Well, both. Star formation is pretty well studied. So there's a number of people who do observations of these clouds, including Gary Fuller here at Manchester. Now, I work on the theory side, so I do simulations of these clouds. They're very turbulent, so in some cases we can really treat these as a fluid dynamics problem. We have very high velocity turbulent gas, and we add in gravity, and then we can hopefully get right what's going on in the clouds.
So you said that that's low mass stars are kind of like the sun. What are the mass limits on those?
Well, it really depends on who's studying them. So to some people, low-mass stars is less than a solar mass. So the median star, if you look at a large cluster of stars, the median star mass is about a quarter of a solar mass.
Okay.
So some people put the cutoff between low-mass and high-mass at a few solar masses. Some people, it's about eight solar masses.
So it just depends who you talk to.
That's right.
And what is it that stops higher mass stars forming in this way?
Sometimes it's just about having enough gas. So most of the molecular clouds that are near us are quite small. So if you don't have a large clump with, say, 100 solar masses in it, you can't form a 100 solar mass star.
Yeah. Okay, it's just that simple.
Yes, that's we think that that's really why it is. You really just need a lot of gas, and it needs to be dense, high column density gas to form high-mass stars.
And so in this process, you have a protostar.
Yes.
And in your talk today, you discussed a couple of problems with protostars that we don't quite understand. Could you tell us what those are?
Yes, one of the unsolved problems with protostars is one of trying to understand how long stars accrete their gas. So if we look at theoretical models and predict how long stars accrete their gas, maybe 100,000 years or 200,000 years, then that means protostars should be a certain brightness or a certain luminosity. But when we look at these local star-forming regions near us, protostars are actually a lot dimmer than the theoretical models predict.
Okay, and do you have an explanation why?
Well, there's a number of things that could be happening. One is that the star formation time could be longer than current theoretical models predict. One possibility is that these low-mass stars could be hiding their luminosity somehow. Well, how do you hide it? Well, you could have very short, very intense bursts that are very rare. In order to see these bursts, we would need to have a really large number of protostars to catch one happening. But in our local regions, we only have maybe a few hundred protostars that are well mapped and well understood and well studied. So it might not be a large enough sample, and maybe these bursts really are happening, it's just they're so rare that we don't catch them.
So this is a burst in terms of increasing how much stuff is accreting onto the star.
That's right. So it's an elevated accretion rate that happens for a very brief time, but could account for as much as a quarter of the mass of the star over the whole time that the burst could happen.
And what kind of signatures would we see if we were observing one? What would change with the star?
Well, we do see some of these bursts in older type objects like T Tauri stars. These stars are special because they're optically revealed, so there's not quite so much gas, but they still have an accretion disk, so they're still accreting a bit of gas. So when one of these bursts happens, the luminosity goes up by a factor of 100 in a short amount of time, say in a year. So you're looking at this star, and many of these stars have been observed for decades, and all of a sudden, in a given year, the luminosity will start to increase sharply and keep on going until it's elevated by a factor of 100 relative to what it started out with.
Wow. Are these bursts something that an amateur astronomer could see with a backyard telescope, or do you need those really big telescopes on top of mountains to see?
No, I bet an amateur could actually see them. There was one that was found last year. They managed to catch it with quite a number of telescopes, but I'm pretty sure that if you had a very good optical telescope in your backyard, you might have been able to see it.
But probably not from Manchester because it's too cloudy here.
No.
You said that these are very rare. How many have we seen?
We've observed about 20 of these in the last 70 years.
Wow, so very, very rare then.
Yep.
And do you have any ideas what maybe triggers these bursts?
Well, so we think it's related to a very elevated accretion rate onto the star. So the question is, what can be stirring up the gas around the star that could make the accretion rate go way up? There are a couple of different models that can account for it. One of the simplest is just the idea that some of these stars might have a companion, and if the companion interacts with a disk, it will disturb the disk and create clumps, which can cause an elevated accretion rate. Probably what is more likely to be happening is some kind of instability in the disk. So these accretion disks around the star are not necessarily nice and smooth, but there's all kinds of turbulence and other things going on in there. So, for example, if the disk becomes too massive, gravity can take over and create large clumps of gas that will advect into the star and then accrete. So anything that causes instability in the disk could create these clumps, which could create one of these large bursts.
So how often do you see this in all young stars, or is this something that you only see in a few?
It's very rare, yes. That's part of the problem. We think that these accretion events occur maybe 1% or 0.1% of the formation time that the star is accreting gas. And if we only observe a couple hundred protostars in a close star-forming region, we may not even catch any of them doing this.
So taking a step back again, I don't think we touched on how long the actual, the initial star formation takes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, and it's one that we're still trying to constrain. We have theoretical models for that, but one of the problems that's historically been a problem in star formation is that what we get for theory and what we see observationally disagree somewhat. So based on theoretical models, stars might take, I don't know, maybe 100,000 years to accrete most of their gas. But observationally, if that's what's happening, then we expect these young protostars to be much brighter than they actually are. So maybe it takes 500,000 years or a few 100,000 years longer than what theoretical models usually suggest.
These accretion disks around the stars that might cause these episodic outbursts, would they be the material that then planets would form out of?
That's right. So these disks last for maybe 1 million to 10 million years at the very tail end, and it's at this later stages of a few million years that maybe we start to get planet formation.
I noticed on your website you have quite a lot of nice animations of all of this. How much time on a computer does that take to run those?
So the simulations, I run them at National Supercomputing Centers in the U.S.
Right.
So typically, in computer time, maybe 50,000 hours, maybe a bit more, depending upon how much physics is in the simulation.
Oh. And are they pretty accurate now? I'm kind of wondering, are those movies what we would see if we could kind of speed this all up?
I hope so, because if it wasn't, then that means that the simulations are not right. But it's an ongoing problem to actually compare the simulations and observations to try and get the things that we can't see and make predictions for what observers should see as we go to higher and higher telescope resolution.
So if these young stars are forming in clouds of gas, what kind of telescopes do people use to observe them so that you can compare your simulations with them?
People look in various wavelengths. One common one is to map the clouds in the millimeter emission.
Okay.
And that gives you a sense of the column density of the cloud. Another thing you can do is try and look at the cloud in the infrared, like with the Spitzer Space Telescope. That will tell you where young protostars actually are. So this is micron wavelength emission. And then there's going to be some huge results coming out from ALMA. And ALMA has the capability to do interferometric observations in a number of wavelengths and actually look at molecules and not just continuum type emission.
And what's the next step for this research? Where is it going?
There are a number of outstanding problems in star formation that we're trying to explain and understand. One of them is simply the distribution of masses that stars have. This is observationally well constrained, but theoretically, we're still trying to understand where this comes from. Also, the multiplicity of stars is an open problem. Our sun is a single star, but many, if not most, stars actually have a companion. So trying to understand what the initial multiplicity is of stars and where it comes from is also pretty huge. So there are quite a number of outstanding problems.
So when you say the kind of mass range, what do we see stars forming? What low mass do you have to get to before it stops being a star?
Usually the limit between brown dwarfs, which are, do not fuse hydrogen, is about 0.08 solar masses.
Okay.
So these are still somewhat bright, but they don't have the same nuclear fusion going on that our sun does.
And you said about binary stars or multiple star systems. So is there a completely different formation process for those, or is it just maybe that the sun started off with a companion and it disappeared, or?
Yeah, our sun probably didn't have a companion, though it's really hard to tell because maybe the companion became unbound or something dynamically happened, but it's probably unlikely. Most of these stars with companions have spacing or separations between the companions of maybe a few AU to 1,000 AU. And, I mean, various things can happen and the separations can evolve over time. But, yeah, probably our sun never had it.
Okay. But when you have multiple stars, they all form from one cloud of gas, or would it be different clouds of gas that then kind of come together?
Well, they form out of the same molecular cloud, but they might form in different cores and then migrate together. That's a possibility.
And another problem that you talked about was a spread in the age of stars that you see. Now, is this, to me, that doesn't seem like a problem. Is that a problem?
It depends. So the question is, when you have a cloud that's forming stars, how long does the star formation last? So there are some people that say, well, star formation in a given cloud should only go on for maybe a million years. You can imagine that if we look at clusters that appear to have stars forming that have an age spread of a few million years, that would conflict with a short formation time. So if you think that star formation in the clouds can go on for a few million years, 10 million years, then there's no reason why all the stars need to form at once. They can form in a nice spread out fashion, and some of the stars can just be much older than others.
That's all very interesting. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thanks for the interview.